All right, there we go. Okay.
Ready to go.
As we meet the last of the survivors, we need to be in awe and have the deepest respect for them. If nothing else, for the fact that they get out of bed every single morning, they have functional lives, and they lead productive lives. Try to imagine what it was like to be them. And yet still, year after year, they do amazing things. Some of them have produced the most incredible things that have changed our generation. And some of them have clung and have deepened their faith, deepened their emunah, and their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu post a destruction, post such a Gehenna. Imagine what it was like to be them, to be a teenager in those days. Imagine what it was like to see death and destruction all around you and yet move on and create families and generations of Jews after you to impact the world, both individually, in your community, as well as in the broader world. These are the people that you're interviewing. These are the people that you are spending time with. These incredible, incredible people. Today, we're going to talk about what gave, perhaps, those individuals the strength to be able to accomplish all those amazing things. We're not going to talk about why the Holocaust happened. We're not going to talk about why Jews suffered, because it's not for us to ask why. It's not for a Jew to ask Lama, why did such a thing happen? It's for a Jew to ask Lama, to what can I learn from this? To what can I change my life? And how can I make myself and my world around me better from meeting those individuals that kept their faith, that kept their emunah and their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu during these incredibly challenging times? How do they do it? What kind of person be able to hold on to such a faith, to hold on to such an emunah, and to be able to stay strong even post-destruction? Someone with emunah knows that the Ribbono Shalom, that the Creator of the universe, has a plan for each and every single person in this world. It knows that every moment is precious. Every second in this world is an opportunity to accomplish amazing things, even in the hardest times, even in the times of absolute destruction and absolute Gehenna all around them. The Ramban famously tells us in Parshas Vayera that the concept of an isayon, the concept of a test, is to bring us to our potential. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives every single person in this world a test to maximize their growth in this world. If we come to something difficult in our lives, it's there not as a wall to protect us, to stop us from accomplishing, but rather for us to climb over and to accomplish amazing things. When we think about an isayon, we think about something that was challenging, even in the hardest times. We think about Avram Avinu, who was asked to shecht his son Yitzchak, who he waited decades and decades for. The reason why he was asked to do such a thing, the Ramban says, is to enable him to realize his potential and his emunah. And so while the individual survivors each were placed in incredible, horrific scenarios, at those moments when they said, you know what, even if it's so hard, I'm going to hold on to my emunah, each and every moment of those nisyonos were ways for that individual person to help reach and grow to their potential. The pasuk in Tehillim, in Perek, Samuel tells us the following, Nasata l'ri'echa nis l'his noses, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that I give you a banner, l'his noses, to raise up. The word nis, banner, is the same word as nisayon. And therefore, says the Ramban, when a person achieves and accomplishes and surpasses the test and nisayon that's given to them, they raise up their banner to show who they are in this world. They say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here I am. I've accomplished amazing things. This is who I am. This is who I am internally. And even though sometimes I'm not always a perfect person, but in the moments of crisis, in the moments of our test of our emunah, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, here, I'm giving you your banner. Let's see. What is on your banner? What does it say there? Does my banner say that I'm a Baal Ma'amin, that I believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I can show it on a day-to-day basis? That's what the point of a Nisayon is. And that's the goal. On an individual level, every moment of challenge is an opportunity to raise our banner and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here I am. This is me. This is the real me. The real me. When a challenge comes, that's when we grow to our potential. On a national level as well, Klal Yisrael achieve amazing things, even at the hardest times. Right? Beryl Wine, the noted Jewish historian, says the following. The Jewish people are amazing. They continuously endure suffering and tragedy because of one aspect of their emunah. What's that aspect of their emunah on a national level? That aspect is the ability to look at the big picture and the long-term plan of Hashem. If we look at individual moments of suffering, it's almost untenable. Right? If we stop and think about all the stories that you've been hearing from your survivors, think about each and every one of those moments. Individually, it's hard for us to process. Right? How could it be? How could such a thing happen to this individual person? And how could you then get up the next morning and be a functional person and a productive person and an amazing Jew? How is it possible? But yet, if we think about it on the national level, says Rabbi Wine, every single time Klal Yisrael has been oppressed, has been beaten down, we accomplish amazing things. Because we understand that Akash Baruch Hu has a greater mission for Klal Yisrael. We as individual Jews are part of a greater whole. We're part of something bigger than just myself and my life and my accomplishments. We're part of Klal Yisrael, where Akash Baruch Hu has a divine mission for. And that emunah, to go into life, into challenges, saying, yeah, it's hard for me right now, but I'm part of something bigger. I'm part of this incredible entity called Klal Yisrael. That's something which I know Hashem has a mission for. And even though it's hard for me, I'm going to be part of something. Jews believe in the long game. We believe that enemies come and enemies go. But we beat them all. We've survived them all. We've outlasted them all. Because our Kadosh Baruch Hu loves Klal Yisrael. He loves us, and by definition, loves us as individuals. The Gemara Menachos and Samach Gimel tells us that Jews are compared to olives. Jews are compared to olives. Because the more that you squeeze them, and the more that you oppress them, the more that we challenge them, that's when they reach their potential. And an olive in and of itself is great. But the olive oil, that which comes out of it, and the moments that we're squeezed, that's when we achieve greatness. And that every, both as an individual and as a klal, that's when we've achieved greatness. Rav Dessler writes in Mechtav Me'Eliyahu that every single time throughout Jewish history that we have a national tragedy, we come out stronger. And he points to the Shoah, he points to the Holocaust in particular. And he says, well, of course, we can't understand why. It's not for us to ask why. But if you look at the byproduct, we see a Kadosh Baruch Hu's long game. What was the immediate after effects of the Jews being oppressed and kicked out of Europe? It was the birth of Medina Yisrael. It was the birth, our ability to begin to settle Eretz Yisrael as a real viable homeland for us to be able to go to. Again, is that the reason why? Again, we don't ask why. It's not for us to ask why. But it's for us to see and understand that our Kadosh Baruch Hu has a plan for us individually and has a plan for us as a nation. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, Zatzal, was once asked in an interview, how do we understand the theology, how do we understand the hashkafos for us to be able to process the pain and the suffering that the Jews endured during the Holocaust? And he said that the most appropriate theological answer to understand the suffering that happened during the Holocaust is not some deep seated philosophical response, it's to cry. And that's what we do. Jews cry. We cry to suffering. On Tisha B'Av morning, we sit on the ground remembering all the tragedies of Klal Yisrael, and we sit and we cry. And we read Eicha. The ultimate sefer understanding the sufferings of Klal Yisrael, to understand that, we can't understand why. It's not for us to ask why, but just to respond and to cry and to understand the immense, immense loss and suffering. You know what we do after that? We cry, we read Eicha, we sit, we read the kinos, we sit on the ground, comes Chatzos, we get up. And not only do we get up, we put on our talis, we put on our tefillin, and we daven mincha right after that. Because the Jewish response is not, yes, I cry, but it's to move on. Because I realize that the bigger picture, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us is to respond, lima, to what am I going to accomplish? It's not just enough to know and to understand and to cry. That's not enough. The response of a Jew, the response of a ma'amin, of someone who has true emunah on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to say, even though things are hard, I'm going to cry, and to recognize how hard it is, but I'm going to move on. And we say at the end of Eicha, Chadish Yamenu Kikadem. Kadosh Baruch Hu, yes, it's hard. Yes, there's suffering. Yes, there's tragedy. But bring us back to the way we were. Bring us back to the time when we were connected to you. So right away we get up and connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's their Jewish response. So while the Jews were sitting there in the ghettos, in the concentration camps, day after day, year after year, the Jews who were Ma'aminim, who clung to their Emunah, they didn't just leave things the way they were. There were Jews that put on their tefillin. There were Jews that tried to keep kosher. Jews that tried to light Hanukkah candles with potato skins and pieces of butter and strings from their uniforms. Amazing people who, no matter what the suffering was, no matter how hard it was there, day after day after day, they said, we're going to keep getting up. We're going to get up off those barracks filled with people, filled with disgust. We're going to get up. We're going to line up for the Nazis in Yimach Shemam. And then we're going to go, we're going to do our work, we're going to come home to the barracks, and we're going to light chanukah candles in the barracks. Because we're going to get up. That's what a yid does. We get up, and we continue to serve a Kaddish Baruch Hu, no matter what. Rabbi Sacks continued, he said, most faith is born in a simple, consistent view of the universe. Things are either good or bad. Says Rabbi Sacks, Judaism is born in cognitive dissonance. On the one hand, we believe in a Kaddish Baruch Hu and a God of justice. On the other hand, we see a world full of injustice. How do we reconcile that? How do we see? How do we understand that? How can we begin to understand babies getting killed in bayonets and tzaddikim in the worst, most disgusting situations being destroyed and being killed? Again, we don't ask why. We try to understand it. We try to see the reaction of it. Greater people than us have thought about the why. Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu, Yirmiyahu HaNavi. They've all asked the Kaddish Baruch Hu why. The entire Sefer Iyov is predicated on the why. And yet still, we don't fully understand that because we can't possibly understand it. The Kaddish Baruch Hu says, Lo Moshe Vasek, Moshe Vasekhem, Lo Darachai, Du'um Hashem. Hashem says, you can't possibly understand this because you're not me, you're not God, you're not omnipotent. We can't ask why. But we ask to what we could accomplish and how we understand and look at those people who did such a thing. Ray Sachs continues and he says, because when you find that cognitive dissonance between the world that is and the world that ought to be, there's only one way of solving it. And that's not only by thought, it's by deed. By performing mitzvos and serving Hashem even in the most trying times. That's the answer. That's the answer to why. All we can do is continue to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and day in, day out. Rav Ephraim Oshri was the Rav of the Kovna Ghetto during the war. He was asked thousands and thousands of she'ilos, thousands of halacha and maisa, practical Judaic questions during the war. Can you imagine? There were yidden that were suffering, didn't have food, didn't have anything to eat, didn't have nowhere to sleep, but yet they asked she'ilos. And they came to Rav Oshri, and Rav Oshri wrote down all these little questions. And at the end of the war, he hid them. After the war, they went back and they dug up Rav Oshri's answers and his questions in cans that he buried in them. And this is what Rav Oshri wrote about his experience in answering the shaylas. And these are his words in his introduction to his famous tshuvas. So listen to this. I was awed by the privilege granted by me, by providence, to be the scribe who recorded these questions, asked in the in-depth and responses that emerged from the depths of misery and degradation, of suffering and death, and of resurrection. Did our enemies, the Germans, many of them church-going sons of church-going mothers and fathers, ask their priests and ministers how to care for the Jewish dead? Were they concerned to learn whether one may use clothes stolen from a dead Jew, or a curtain ripped from the ark where the Torah scrolls were kept? Did they receive dispensation to bayonet pregnant mothers? But we as Jews did inquire as to the proper prayers to say after food when forced to eat on a fast day. We wanted to know the correct form of a blessing the Jew says before going to his death and sanctification of God. The world at large may not understand this, but the greatness of the Jew can be seen in these very concerns. The enemy does not kill blindly, savagely, like a dog frothing at the mouth, but kills methodically, like a robot, measuring height, weight, years, setting aside plumbers and electricians while determining that doctors and nurses should die. The enemy robs and kills, and the Jew, knowing that he is going to be killed only because he's a Jew, sanctifies God in going to his death, wants to die with the correct words on his lips, because the Jew who sanctified every atom of life sanctifies dying as well, and a martyr's death must be accompanied by a blessing that's correct. It's unbelievable. Chaver, try to process for a moment what it's like to ask shailas in halacha about what bracha to make when one goes to a martyr's death. These were the amazing, amazing Jews. Thousands and thousands of shailas were asked of Oshri and other rabbanim in the ghettos, in the concentration camps. There are endless stories about amazing Jews in the hardest of times who, no matter what, still pushed hard and not only connected, but even strengthened their emunah. I want to tell you about one such Jew. This Jew's name is Chaim Yeager, my Zaidi. My Zaidi was an amazing, amazing, amazing person. My Zaidi was an older man during the war. He was already in his 20s when the war broke out, and he was an officer in the Romanian army. While he was in the war, while he was an officer, Poland invaded The Germans invaded Romania, and then Romanians became a Nazi state. His own soldiers arrested him and placed him under a guard. As my Zaidi was there, he was, again, in his uniform. They didn't have a prison for officers, so they put him in a box made of metal, there baking in the sun. And they didn't want to waste a guard on him, so they put a killer dog outside of his box to within the fence in order to guard him. My grandfather said he was there. He doesn't know. Days, he was not sure. He said he started becoming losing consciousness because of the loss of food and water. And he was davening and davening and davening. In particular, he said over and over again, Tehillim Perek Chaf Tes, over and over and over again, davening Kadosh Baruch Hu should save him. After days of hearing the dog barking outside his box, all of a sudden it stopped. He lifted up the box. There was no dog. He escaped outside, no guards. And he just kept walking. And he walked right outside the camp. And eventually, he started walking back to his town. He did get picked up and arrested again. And he was placed in a labor camp. In a labor camp for 3 years, he was 24, strong soldier. And for 3 years, every single day, he slept outside, cutting down trees for the Third Reich, Yimach Shemam. And every single day of those 3 years that he was cutting down trees, he put on his tefillin. He said he kept his tefillin inside his jacket and under his hat. And every single day, he never missed a day of tefillin. And he davened Baal Peh every single day. After 3 years of hard, intense labor, as the war was ending, the Nazis decided they were going to liquidate all the labor camps and all the traveling workers. And they put him on a cattle car. And they started sending him to one of the camps. He didn't know which one they were headed to. As they were going, they were traveling on this cattle car packed stuffed with Jews. He says he remembers it was Yom Kippur. And he says he remembers that all of a sudden they started davening Kol Nidre on the cattle car. Baal Peh. Amazing. He says they were on the cattle car and they were traveling through the countryside in Romania. And all of a sudden, one day, the cattle car stopped. They said, Jews off the train. As they got off the train, the local Romanian peasants came to bring the Nazis food and water as they were traveling. They get off the car. They let the Jews walk around outside on the grass outside the train. The Nazis were there eating and drinking, smoking, getting food from the locals. And my grandfather with his tefillin, was there, he left his tefillin on the train, and he went to take a walk outside on the grass. They happened to, quote unquote, stop in his hometown, where he grew up in Romania. As he's walking around on the train outside the train, he saw his next door neighbor, a Romanian. The Romanian turned to my grandfather. He said, Chaim. He says, it's me. He says, come into my cart. I'll save you. I'll hide you for the rest of the war. And my grandfather said, I can't go with you. By tefillin are on the train. And so he would think, he should go. For whatever reason, he decided to go back on the train. He went back on the train, ignoring the pleas of his friend who said, I'll come, I'll buy you a pair of tefillin. He said, I have to go back onto the train. He went back onto the train to be with his tefillin. And so he didn't want to leave them. He wore them every single day, 3 years, in a hard labor camp. As the Jews got back on the train, the Nazi came and slammed the cattle car shut. So they fought, and they started going back on their way. The cattle car is going, the train's going, miles and miles and miles, bumping along the rough road. When all of a sudden, slowly, the door of the cattle car started sliding open. And they realized that the Nazi, when he slammed the door, did not lock it. And all the Jews were there, and they looked out as a moving train, and they were over a river on a bridge. My grandfather and 9 other men saw the opportunity, and with their bags, with his tefillin, they jumped off a moving train into the water, hoping, diving for survival. And the way my grandfather told it to us, he says he remembers like a movie, landing into the water, watching the bullets fly past them in the water because the Nazis shooting down from the train. And moment after moment, he said it seems like it took forever, but in just moments, all 9 men, including my grandfather, survived. They swam up onto shore. Then what are they going to do? So they lived in the forest for a week, living, eating, whatever they could eat in the forest day after day, hearing soldiers shooting on both sides of them, not knowing who was the enemy, who was not. And they survived in the forest for a week. After a week, they decided to start walking. And they came to a farm, again, not knowing what's going to be. It could be a Nazi sympathizer or somebody who's going to turn them in, somebody who's going to shoot them on the spot. And it was a Romanian farmer who took them in for the rest of the war, fed them, took care of them, protected them until the war was over. However, what kind of emunah does such a person have? Because this same Zadie Chaim, this same grandfather after the war, came to America and said, it's not enough just to survive. He had nothing, not a penny to his name. So he decided to sell chocolates and cigarettes on the streets. Again, pennies and pennies. But he wasn't surviving. So he decided to get a job, quote-unquote, a real job. And every single Sunday, he got fired for 3 years because he wouldn't come in on Shabbos. He came to work all throughout the week. Came Shabbos, didn't come. Sunday, Chaim, where were you? Oh, I had a stomach ache, I had this, I had that. And he got fired from different jobs every single Sunday. Until eventually he found a job working for the first kosher bakery in Newark, New Jersey at the time, Pachter's Bakery. And in order to keep Shabbos, my grandfather took a job putting pieces of dough into an oven, standing on his feet from 3 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He davened Shachar Shmincha, was on his marv in front of the oven. Eat 3 meals a day in front of the oven, just so he could keep Shabbos. However, what kind of emunah does a person need to have to be such a person? The kind of person that realizes that every moment is an opportunity and that you're part of something bigger. You're part of Klal Yisrael. Hopefully, what you're going to glean and you're going to learn from your interviews is understanding that we're part of something bigger. And it's easy to look at and say, I'm this kind of a Jew. I label myself, I'm part of this community, I'm part of this yeshiva, these are my Dalet Amos. But to stop and to process and to think about that we are part of Klal Yisrael, we're part of something bigger, we're part of an entity which HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves and tells us He will protect us forevermore. That, Bezras Hashem, is the ultimate goal to learn from our survivors. Emunah is the recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us all the time. And to understand and to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu with us all the time. And that way, every single opportunity which presents itself as an issayon for us, we make those decisions as to what is correct and what is not correct. What is the Ratzon Hashem and what is not the Ratzon Hashem. That emunah is what gives us the strength to accomplish the most amazing things in this world, even in the hardest and darkest of times. So Bezaz Hashem Yisbarach, Hashem should give you all the strength and the mental acuity to learn those lessons from your survivors, to be able to, more importantly, inculcate and to foster your own emunah. And that way, as you go through life, when you're faced with challenges, when you're faced with hard things in this world, you can always have that emunah to fall back on, to give you strength to accomplish absolutely amazing things like all these survivors did. So thank you so much for coming. Mezah Hashem Yisbarach. You should always live a life of emunah, tzadik emunah so yichya. Have a good day. Okay, guys. Thank you. Okay, you guys get some lunch and you can go on to second period.